If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. And right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, WWE Hall of Famer Bully Ray and I talk a little NXT as we get closer to TakeOver in Toronto. One of the newest members of the AEW locker room speaks out about his shocking action at Fighter Fest, and we celebrate the 40th anniversary of a pro wrestling institution. NXT champion Adam Cole said it on our show last week that his chapter with Johnny Gargano was over. Well, he may want it to be over, but Johnny Gargano certainly isn't ready for it to be. Bully and I give you our thoughts on Cole Gargano 3 coming up at TakeOver in Toronto. Shawn Spears shocked the wrestling world with his chair shot to the head of Cody Rhodes at AEW Fighter Fest. We dissect his comments to Jim Ross about why he did it and who he's bringing to All Out to stand in his corner. Plus, Pro Wrestling Illustrated celebrated its 40th anniversary this year, and we talk to the man who makes it all happen. Stu Sachs joins us. All that right now on the Busted Open Podcast. When we had Adam Cole on last week, and then what we saw last night, completely different. So for those who didn't hear it, let's go back to last week and what Adam Cole had to say about Johnny Gargano. Well, you talk about being free. One thing you haven't been able to be free of is Johnny Gargano. What can we expect between you two moving forward, and especially that NXT championship you have around your waist?
Well, let me tell you, I feel like as far as I'm concerned, I've proven that point, and now I can move on from Johnny. You know, I had my rematch with Johnny. It went well. I'm the NXT champion, and now as far as I'm concerned, I'm ready for new challengers. I'm done with Johnny Gargano.
Now, that's what he said last week, and it seemed like he was going to fulfill that promise on NXT last night, Bully, because he was actually going to give somebody else an opportunity at that NXT championship at the end of the show last night, but obviously it didn't go that way.
And what I hope you realize that I'm giving you the opportunity of a lifetime. And don't worry, I'm alone. There's no Undisputed Era. It's just me, and it's just you. Twan, I'm going to give you a fair chance to, I don't know, maybe slap the taste out of my mouth.
Just you and me. That's too bad. Because I didn't come alone.
For the first time since losing the NXT title at TakeOver 25, Johnny Gargano is back at Full Sail, and Johnny Gargano is bringing the fight to the new NXT champion.
Gargano is furious.
Gargano taking umbrage with the fact that Cole tried to humiliate Gargano in Gargano's hometown of Cleveland.
Cole's on the run.
Well, I just can't shake Gargano, Bully, it seems.
Before I get into this, I've said it before, and I want to say it again. Mauro Ranallo makes everything better.
Yes.
Just listening to the call, I was excited. But yeah, Gargano and Cole 3. Great setup for it. I'm excited for it because it's been a hell of a story, and I like the way they're going to blow this off. 2 out of 3 falls, and then Regal went on social media and said that one guy is going to be able to determine what the first, what type of match the first fall will be, and then the other guy will get to determine what the second fall will be. And if it's tied at the end of 2 falls, William Regal will decide what the third match stipulation will be. It's interesting because you almost know that they're going to go to the third fall, right?
Usually it does, Bully.
Right. Now, if it's William Regal, what type of match do you think or match stipulation do you think William Regal is going to call for?
That's a great question, because you know that Cole and Gargano are going to be out for blood. So it's going to be interesting what they come up with for those first two falls. But William Regal, more sensible, obviously the voice of reason when it comes to NXT. I'm wondering what that third and final fall is going to be.
Imagine if they went completely backwards. Imagine like Cole were to say the first fall is going to be first blood. And then Gargano said that the second fall was going to be like a TLC match. And imagine at the end of two falls, you got bloody and destroyed guys who can't even get to their feet. And then you get to the third fall and William Regal comes out and says, it's going to be a catch-as-catch-can wrestling match.
Like, yeah, or like you said, like it's first blood match where at the end of two falls, they're completely exhausted. And William Regal says, you know, we're going to have a 1 hour Iron Man match.
Yeah, exactly.
For the third and final fall.
Yeah, that's even better. A 1 hour Iron Man match.
And wow. Both of them are looking like, are you kidding me? But you know what? NXT TakeOver Toronto sold. Like, whatever you put on other than this match, fine and dandy, a little gravy on top of the mashed potatoes. But the meat and potatoes is going to be this match. This match alone sells TakeOver for me in Toronto.
Absolutely. These two guys alone sell TakeOver for me. They have never let me down. Gargano always gets the job done. Adam Cole always gets the job done. I only got to spend a little bit of time with him in Ring of Honor when I got there, and then he was on his way out. I used to sit there and watch the guy perform. Awesome job every time. These guys have been getting it done in NXT. I'm excited for the 2 out of 3 match at TakeOver. And Dave, I actually love your idea. I said let's go backwards with it, and you put the cherry on top. Let's go crazy in the first fall. Let's go crazy in the second fall. And just when these guys are broken, battered, and bruised, let's go 1 hour time limit Iron Man.
Yeah, it's like when
because these guys can pull it off.
Yeah, and you talk about Iron, like that would be like Iron Maiden, you know, starting to set off with the Trooper, and you go into the Number of the Beast, and then your encore is Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner. That's what this NXT TakeOver match would be. And it's again, you know, this is where you got to give NXT a lot of credit. And a lot of fans, you know, we talk a lot about Raw. We talk a lot about SmackDown. NXT always seems to be the show that we forget about. Us as fans and even us as broadcasters, Bully, because there's always so much going on with the other shows. And this being on the network on Wednesdays, it gets overlooked, especially since it's only an hour. But NXT continues to do the little things and do them well. I mean, how many times do we talk about, man, this roster's depleted. How are they going to move forward? How are they going to get you into a takeover? And every single takeover, they seem to outdo the last one. And also, you talked about Mauro Ranallo. I mean, listen, we could talk about the all-time greats. But, you know, when you look at Mauro, is there a better commentator right now than what he's doing Wednesday nights on NXT?
Listen, we just listened to a little snippet of the Gargano and Adam Cole stuff. And just listening to Mauro doing the call of the action made it more exciting for me. Whenever I watch Mauro call a boxing match, whenever I listen to him calling wrestling, he has such a unique way of making it more exciting for me. Guys like him and Joey Styles had this way of just, I could feel their passion. I could feel their love and their enthusiasm for what they were watching and what they were verbalizing to me as a fan. So, yeah, Mauro's phenomenal.
Yeah, like obviously Jim Ross is the greatest of all time. Mauro right now within the world of the WWE, I think, is the best. And he has more freedom.
When I talk about other announcers, we just know and assume that JR is the best. Leaving JR out of that comment has nothing to do with JR is the be-all and end-all, and then everybody else.
Yeah, because like if we had like the Mount Rushmore of announcers, we wouldn't put Jim Ross because it would be the Jim Ross Rush. You know, it would be Mount Jim Ross.
I think it would be JR, Gordon Solie. I don't know. One day that we'll save that for a show.
Bob Caudle, I think, is one that you might want to put up there. Mercer with World Class is a great one. You know, Morrow's finding his way.
Morrow on the main
roster. Lance Russell.
Think about this. Think about Morrow on Monday Night Raw with no handcuffs on.
But the problem is there's always going to be handcuffs on Monday Night Raw.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, I was just playing fantasy land for a second there. Morrow calling Monday Night Raw without any restrictions. Them just saying, Morrow, say whatever you want.
You know what that is? That is fantasy land. That's like selling widgets, right?
What's a widget?
Because, and this is where, like, you know, a Michael Cole gets a lot of unfair criticism, because you have to understand what that guy has to do for 3 hours on Monday Night Raw. It is a commercial for the network. It's a commercial for the next pay-per-view. It's a commercial for their social media. It's a commercial for everything else that's going on in that world, the WWE universe. It's very, very difficult to do that. And, oh, yeah, by the way, call a match. Morrow? Hey, he has to mention another event. He has to mention a takeover. Maybe there's something he has to talk about as a sidebar. But 90% of his job is calling the match. I don't know if there's any other announcers that have the freedom like Amaro right now.
Keyword, freedom. I wish more wrestlers, I wish more announcers had freedom. And I guess I should say in that in the WWE. Because in companies like Impact or Ring of Honor, especially AEW, that freedom exists.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
You know, he's also the editor and publisher of the greatest pro wrestling magazine of all time, and right now the surviving magazine. And we bring him in right now, the great Stu Sachs. Stu, how are you today?
I'm good, but I guarantee you, this might not be the best interview you guys ever do, but I won't hang up on you.
Well, we appreciate that. And thanks for the vote of confidence, Stu. I think it's going to be the best interview we've ever done. Bully, your thoughts?
Sure.
Stu, I want to ask you a question right off the bat. Is there a sense of accomplishment or pride knowing that after 40 years, Pro Wrestling Illustrated is truly, you, like I said earlier, you're the Alexander the Great of wrestling magazines. You're the last of the Mohicans. You're the last one standing. There's got to be a sense of accomplishment there.
I guess, I mean, in a sense, yes. In a sense, it's kind of sad because there were so many, including many, many of ours that didn't last as long. And I'm sorry about that. You know, it's just, that's the way the print business is these days. It's very, very difficult to keep alive in this industry. But I think that, you know, that we pride ourselves on the quality of the magazine, and I think that the best ones will, you know, best of anything will succeed. So that's, I do take a little bit of pride in that, yes. And thank you.
And again, 40 years. I mean, it's one thing to be surviving, but 40 years of being this type of a magazine that a lot of people consider the Bible of pro wrestling, so many stories attached to it, so many stories that probably fans don't know about. I mean, you know, what has this roller coaster ride been for you?
It's been a lot of fun. I started off, I was 23 years old, right out of college. And I did not expect to be doing this for my whole life. My goal was to be a sports reporter for a daily newspaper. And I was given an opportunity to interview for the job when I was still in college. And I was given a writing test, and I was offered the job. And I had to think long and hard about it because, you know, journalism jobs were really tough to come by. And I was given something that looked like a lot of fun. So I thought long and hard, and I ultimately turned down the job because I was still in college and I really wanted to graduate. I knew if I went to the magazines, I would never finish college. So a second time, somebody left the magazine and they called me up and said, Stu, you know, we the job's here for you if you want it. And I said, same reason, guys, I can't do it. I just got to finish college. And I was like, oh, I'm never going to get another shot at this. Well, in July of 1979, a month after I graduated from college, they offered me the job again, and I was like, okay, this is it. I'm here. So, you know, it started off just amazing because I was with a bunch of guys who were very young, and we had a lot of fun doing what we did. And through the years, you know, I've met a lot of people. A lot of people have come and gone, and I've enjoyed working with, I'd say, practically everyone. And, you know, the downside of the roller coaster is that, you know, now that we're just the only magazine left and we're six times a year, it's just me. I have freelance writers who are great, who I work with very closely, but in the office where we used to have a bunch of guys throwing ideas back and forth at each other, it's just me.
Wow.
So, yeah. So that's the bottom of the roller coaster. But, you know, it's in the electronic age, you still have pretty close contact with everybody. It's not like I'm in a vacuum. If I put out a email to all my freelance writers, my trusted freelancers, I get answers back immediately with all kinds of ideas and suggestions, and it's still pretty good.
Stu, is there a particular year that you worked for PWI that really stood out for you? A banner year, a fun year, a year that you will always remember as being, you know, your best effort or the magazine's best effort?
You know, it's hard to differentiate the years, but I still keep all the sales reports for all the years, and it was fun to get the sales reports and see these crazy high numbers back in the late 80s was just unbelievable. In fact, at one point in 1988, we were outselling Sports Illustrated on the newsstand. Now, I'm not saying we outsold Sports Illustrated because they had millions of subscribers, but on the newsstand, except for the swimsuit issue, we outsold them.
Wow.
So that was a really good period of time.
Stu, you know, and first of all, I'm glad that there really is a Stu Sachs, because I actually kind of doubted that for quite some time, because some of the writers that we grew up reading weren't real. Matt Brock, Liz Hunter, to find out that those were fictional people that were involved in the magazine was heartbreaking for me. And
what?
I know, right? No Liz Hunter? There was no Liz Hunter.
There was no Liz Hunter. But there was. The
you guys are killing this for me.
The people who wrote Liz, they were the character of Liz. And of course, Matt Brock. That was written by a whole bunch of different writers, excluding me. I've never written as Matt Brock, which is amazing. But there were a bunch of different Matt Brocks. So, yeah, I'm sorry to let the cat out of the bag, but, yeah, there were a few that didn't exist. And, in fact, I let off my column this issue, the one that's just out now, proclaiming that, yes, I do exist. And I think most people kind of understand that. Excuse me. But, you know, going to StarCast and being, you know, with everybody and with a lot of fans, and a lot of people came up to me and were just – it was very gratifying for people to come up to me and say, you know, that how much the magazines have meant to them over the years. And, people were asking me to autograph their copies, and it was a lot of fun. In the 40 years, I never did a lot of traveling. I did some, but I was not Bill Apter or Craig Peters, who were out there all the time. And to get amongst, you know, the people who appreciate the magazine was very, very gratifying for me.
And Stu, that's the one thing that why I kind of doubted your existence, because you mentioned Craig Peters and Bill Apter. As fans, we've seen Craig Peters and Bill Apter everywhere. We've seen them at the matches. We've seen them on TBS, you know, back with, you know, at 6:05 with the NWA, you know, this week in pro wrestling. We've seen them, but we never saw you. You're somebody that was definitely behind the scenes. Was that on purpose?
It's more my personality. They were those two guys are very outgoing, and they love to do that kind of thing. That's just not me. I'm more of like, you know, I'll stay in the office. I'll be the guy back here. I'll do what I have to do to get the magazines out. But just to get out and do the public appearances was never really something that I felt particularly good at or was very comfortable doing.
Dave, I am one of the few people and maybe the only person that has a picture with Stu Sachs and Bill Apter.
Wow.
Stu, true or not?
That is true. That was I can't remember the name of the event, but it was someplace here in the suburbs of Pennsylvania. And you were there, and Bill was there, and we got a great picture together. And I think you made a comment. It was like the original dirt sheet, right? But we were far from that.
Well, yeah, because, you know, a lot of people don't know, maybe even that read the magazine now, that back in the day, you know, you followed the storylines, you know, the lot of the interviews that, you know, that we read back in the day, you know, that was within character. You weren't trying to find out about backstage politics or why was this show booked a certain way. It was really an extension of what we saw on TV.
That's exactly right. You know, we sat as a group and we took what was happening on TV and in the arenas and said, how could we take this to the next level and just give the wrestlers a little bit more, you know, a little bit more of a human feel than just, you know, I'm going to beat you up in X town, you know? So, you know, and that was, I think that was the way promos were back earlier. And, you know, they have a lot more depth today, of course, but we tried to do that in the magazines. We tried to, you know, if the wrestlers were not shouting in the interviews that we did in the magazines, they were talking. We had them alone. They weren't in an arena trying to intimidate their opponent. They were just talking to a reporter. So we presented them in character, but in a calmer, more cerebral setting.
Stu, me and Dave were talking earlier about your most popular issue, which is the PWI 500. And obviously fans enjoy that issue probably more than any other one, or at least that's just my opinion. We were also talking about the stock that wrestlers put in the PWI 500. Have you gotten negative feedback from wrestlers themselves about their PWI rankings?
Well, one of the advantages of staying back behind and letting Bill and Craig out into the field and really dealing with the wrestlers face to face is I didn't have to face much of that. Bill in particular took the heat. And these days, you know, Bill's been gone for not gone, but gone from the magazines for 20 years. And he's still hearing gripes from wrestlers saying, you know, why was I 444 in the PWI 500? And Bill's like, you have to understand, I don't work for the magazines anymore. And they said, yeah, but you have connections. You still have something to do with it. And they're like, Bill tries to explain to them that no. But Dan Murphy's out there a lot, and Dan is really he's the guy who spearheads the PWI 500. And I think he hears from wrestlers, and it's not always in a negative way. You know, a lot of the guys are very, very grateful and very, very positive, and they understand that their placement in just being placed in the 500 can mean something to them financially, and they play off of that. And they I can't remember the name of the wrestler, but he actually asked me for permission to have a PWI 500 belt made, and he was I think he was number 500 in the 500 one year, so he was the PWI 500 champion. And it's like, yeah, have fun with it. Go for it.
You know, Stu, did it bother you that, you know, people refer to the wrestler Inside Wrestling, Sports Review Wrestling, and obviously Pro Wrestling Illustrated as Apter mags? I mean, obviously Bill Apter, a big contributor to all those magazines, but did that ever bother you?
To be perfectly honest, it does a little bit. I mean, there's nothing that I could do to change the fact that that's the way they're – I don't think anybody does it with any malicious intent, but and even Bill, when he's approached with the Apter mags term, he tries to push it away, saying, "Look, I didn't come up with that term." He says Dave Meltzer did. I ran into Dave in Las Vegas, and Dave Meltzer says he didn't come up with it. But it's Bill tries to explain to people that he was the face of the magazine, but the whole. Yep, the producing the magazines was a group effort, and you know, he was just one aspect of it, a very, very, very vital aspect of it, but just one aspect of it. And we couldn't have done it without everybody who was on the staff. So I prefer the term Weston Mags because Stanley Weston was the creator and the owner of the magazines for all those years. So I think that encapsulates what the magazines were a little bit more precisely. But, you know, if people want to call them the Apter mags, that's all right, too.
Stu, we've had this conversation before. A lot of the interviews that you've done in PWI are, you know, much like pro wrestling, like fabricated storylines. Mm-hmm. Are there any legitimate sit downs you've done with the boys or the women? And if so, which ones?
Well, that was the way the magazines were done for many, many, many years. You know, where we would, you know, with the trust of the industry and quoting the wrestlers in character, they said, you know, go for it. You know, there's no reason to call, you know, Bully Ray and ask him questions. It's like when he's in character, because it's like calling Lucille Ball and interviewing her as Lucy Ricardo. It doesn't make any sense. It's a character, and as long as the industry trusted us to do it correctly, and we I think we earned that trust, and 99.9% of the wrestlers were fine with it. That's the way we did things back then. But the industry has changed. Things have changed. The magazine has changed. We don't do that anymore at all. We don't fabricate any stories, any quotes. And in fact, I encourage the when I give a writer an assignment, I say talk to the wrestler, get something from them, engage them in conversation, and every one of them has a better real life story than anything that we could possibly come up with. And it's up to you to engage the wrestler in that kind of conversation and giving something that the readers would not be able to read in Wikipedia. And it always comes back with a far better story than anything we could ever create.
Before we had John, Bully and I were talking about how some, not only wrestlers, but even promoters reacted to the power rankings. You know, your rankings were so vital for pro wrestling fans that didn't get to see every single show. Do you have any remembrances or stories of certain run-ins you might have had with wrestlers or with promoters when it came to the rankings?
Again, that would be a Bill thing. I'm safe in the office. Bill's out there facing these, you know, 275-pound giants, asking them why was I 9 instead of 6 in the you know WWF ratings, and Bill's answer was always, you know, we basically reflect the push and of what you're getting in the promotion. So if you're number 1 in the ratings, that means you're main eventing, or if you're obviously the champion is the champion. So, you know, I think that they pretty much understood. And Bill also would call the offices, and he would get a lot of feedback from the offices on, you know, who should be ranked, what's going on. We knew what was going on, but they had better insight into those kind of rankings than we could. And we took what they said and weighed it with our views and came up with the rankings in that way.
Stu, for some of our younger listeners who are obviously caught up in the technology age, who might not read wrestling magazines anymore or magazines in general, who are listening to you right now and might be saying, wow, this magazine's been around for 40 years. I'd love to check it out. Where can fans find Pro Wrestling Illustrated these days? What's the easiest way to get your hands on an issue of PWI?
Okay, the easiest way is to go to our website, which is pwi-online.com. And we offer there the access to the print edition or the digital edition, which they could immediately download to their whatever device they have, and we even have it customized so that it works best on a phone. So that's the best way to do it. I mean, you could still go to the newsstands. Unfortunately, because of the decline of the print industry, the newsstands there are fewer newsstands, and what's out there are their racks are getting smaller. So great. If you could find the magazine at the newsstands, that's a great way to buy it. But to me, go to the website, order it, or better yet, subscribe, and you're saving 50% off what you'd pay at the newsstand anyway. So that to me is the best route.
All right, Stu, 40 years, 40th anniversary of Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Like Bully said, you're the lone survivor.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And, Stu, I know you have the podcast as well for PWI, but 40 years, man, it's something that you should be very, very proud of, and congratulations, and thanks so much for taking the time for us today.
Well, I appreciate that you guys had me on, and I encourage – anybody who's a fan of wrestling magazines or Pro Wrestling Illustrated in particular, to go to our website and click on stream the podcast. We have a 2-hour-long podcast with Bill Apter, Craig Peters, and me, hosted by Al Castle.
Wow!
And we had a gas doing it. It was a lot of fun, and there's some pretty cool testimonials from people in the industry, including one Dave LaGreca, and I appreciate that, Dave. And there's some more out there, and it's a lot of fun. So if you want to know more about the magazines and the history and a lot of stuff that we've never revealed before, that's the place to go.
All right, Stu Sachs, editor and publisher of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the Bible to a lot of pro wrestling fans. Stu, thanks again for the time, and congratulations.
Thank you, Dave and Bully. Appreciate
thanks,
it very
Stu.
Much.
Take care,
bye-bye.
Buddy.
If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music, plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for just $1. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required.
And obviously Shawn Spears with that shot heard around the pro wrestling world on Cody Rhodes and a bloodied Cody Rhodes. And now Shawn Spears calling himself the chairman of AEW. But as I said, JR sat down with Shawn Spears and first question was, why did he attack Cody Rhodes?
How many of those people would you consider in your inner circle, your close friends? Would it be 50, 25, 10?
Maybe less than 10.
I have five. Five people that I let into my inner circle, five people that I trust, that I planned on keeping near and dear to my heart until the day that I died. Cody was one of them. There's certain things that people in regular life, you're just not supposed to do. There's certain things you don't say in the wrestling industry. There are certain terms and certain things you also don't say, especially within your core group. Cody crossed the line, and I think you know what I'm talking about, right?
I got a good idea.
He's changed.
Cody's
put on a suit.
Yeah.
He's given himself a nice fancy executive vice president title, and he's saying the same damn thing that they have said for nearly 8.5 years. He's changed. You don't call someone a good hand, JR.
I'd like to think, Sean, he didn't mean it in a derogatory manner, but I can certainly understand your angst that you took it that way.
It's the curse of this industry to be called a good hand. You know this. 40 years, you know this. You understand what I'm talking about. He should know better, JR. Clearly he forgot, and that's why I wrapped a steel chair around his face at Fyter Fest. Sometimes people just need to be reminded.
Cody did call him a good hand. So when you hear you're a good hand, what are the thoughts that come to mind?
Kiss of death. It's like calling somebody a good little worker. You're a good hand basically means you're no better than a mid-carder at any point in your career. You'll always have a job because you're a good hand. You can get the job done, but you're never going to be a superstar. And if you speak Cody, which is a very interesting language, you know that Cody knew exactly what he was saying about Shawn Spears.
So
you call somebody, if a wrestler says to another wrestler, yeah, brother, you're a good hand, that other wrestler is going to take massive offense to it.
It's almost like being called a ham and egger. You get the job done. You're good
a
enough
ham and
to
egg,
fill the
ham, ham and egger is more of a jobber or an enhancement talent. Frankie DeFalco.
I love
poor
Frankie.
Frankie.
I love
he
Frankie
just,
DeFalco.
He just punches radio.
I love Frankie DeFalco.
You love everybody.
He's an handsome
except
talent.
Becky. You love everybody except Becky.
Unbelievable. Anyway, the conversation continued. Now, there's been a lot of talk and rumor about somebody being by Shawn Spears' side. Let's see what Shawn Spears had to say to good old JR.
He forgot that I was there for the 50th wedding anniversary of his parents. He forgot that I sat at the table for Thanksgiving dinner. He's forgotten who he was.
You guys are like brothers.
We were. So it took a steel chair to remind him of one simple common denominating fact. He bleeds the exact same color that I do. So All Out, Chicago, August 31st, I'll be there. And as the old resilient Rhodes family lineage tells us, he'll show up and I'll make an example out of him.
You have no doubts he's going to accept your challenge? Because I know.
Rhodes, he's a Rhodes. Yeah, he needs to know face to face why. And I just so happen to have an ace up my sleeve, JR. The greatest battles and wars in history weren't won with the biggest weapons or the strongest soldiers. They were won with the greatest minds. Thanks, Tully.
JR, this interview needs to be over with.
Sure, Tully.
Now, if you don't know who Tully is, it's Tully Blanchard. So, Sean Spears, ace in the hole, the man by his side. Hall of Famer, Tully Blanchard, bully.
Interesting to see AEW, a company that is so progressive, using legends like Tully Blanchard to advance and give the rub to their younger talent. What did I say they should do at Raw Reunion?
Make sure those legends rub on the younger talent, put them in the position to succeed.
The minute Tully Blanchard whispers in Sean Spears' ear, he is a bigger star in that moment than he has ever been. He's a bigger star than when he cracked that chair over Cody's head. That's Tully Blanchard. That's one of the original Four Horsemen. And he's whispering in Sean's ear. Sean knows that he's got Tully in his back pocket and up his sleeve. Boom. I also find it interesting that they're still relying on the story that basically revolves around Dusty, right?
Yep.
Who was one of Dusty's arch rivals?
Ric Flair.
And Tully Blanchard.
Well, Tully Blanchard was his Tully Blanchard was, yeah, I mean, you talk about the Four Horsemen, Ric Flair, Ole Anderson, Arn Anderson, Barry Windham, but always Tully Blanchard. Yes, some blood feud, some bloody matches with Tully Blanchard.
Absolutely. Didn't they even have like a barbed wire match or some kind of?
I mean, I remember at the Meadowlands in Jersey, them having a cage match together that was off the chain.
So if you have Tully in Sean Spears' corner, obviously you'd love to have Dusty in Cody's corner.
Yeah.
Who is Cody going to have to turn to? Now, I don't know if he turns to anybody, but obviously he would turn to his...
I would think he would turn to his brother, Dusty.
Right. I love the fact... I have now seen the seed planted for the 2019 version of the story of the Rhodes family moving forward. Tully, an old nemesis, coming back to be in the ear of Sean Spears. Tully being able to tell Sean Spears, I know everything that goes through the mind of a Rhodes. And if Dusty thought it, then Dustin thought it. And if Dustin thought it, then Cody will think it. And there's your story.
It's amazing how AEW is telling stories. You know, they don't have weekly television. And sometimes the WWE misses the mark in storytelling, and they have all those hours of programming. And I love what you first just said. It got me excited because you're absolutely right. Sean Spears did more to get over with Tully whispering in his ear in that sit down with JR than hitting Cody Rhodes in the head with that chair.
Wait, give me that again.
Wait, I repeated what you said, that Sean Spears got more over by having Tully Blanchard whispering in his ear in that sit down with JR than that chair shot to the head of Cody Rhodes.
1,000%, because that's the rub. That's when you have a legend in the same shot, in the same ring, in the same sit down as your up and coming star. Who was Sean Spears before he cracked the chair over Cody's head?
He was Ty Dillinger that failed in the WWE.
Who is he now?
He is somebody that obviously, with having Tully in his ear and Cody as his nemesis, is a main event wrestler for AEW.
Boom. And that's how you create stars overnight. You put them in there with the right people. And as many guys in AEW who might be doing a bunch of moves and athleticism and spots that might not mean nothing to some people, because it's just spots for the sake of spots, they're also giving you cohesive storytelling. I enjoyed the first sit-down between JR and Sean. And JR took a back seat to Sean, which I loved. JR just didn't try to come over the top. JR didn't try to put Sean in a corner. JR just kind of, hey, man, I get where you're coming from. JR gave Sean Spears the spotlight. Sean Spears, the former Ty Dillinger, is now basically kind of taking the lead role in a sit-down with JR and has Tully in his back pocket. How the hell did AEW do in 1 month with Sean Spears that the WWE couldn't do in 10 years with Ty Dillinger?
Think about that, Bully. Fighter Fest took place June 29th. That's when Sean Spears took the chair to Cody's head. Here we are. We're sitting talking about this on July 18th. Not even a month. Hasn't even been a month. And that guy went from somebody who was, you know, gone from the WWE and really hadn't made a mark in AEW either. Now, all of a sudden, he's a main event wrestler. Now, all of a sudden, you're going to buy a ticket to see him go up against Cody Rhodes in a main event. In a match. Have
we ever seen situations like this before in the history of pro wrestling?
Yeah, we've seen
What's the best example? What pops to mind? How about Eric Bischoff telling Steve Austin that nobody that wears black trunks and black boots will ever get over in the wrestling business? One company saw absolutely nothing in a guy named Steve Austin, and a different company made him, or they made each other, into probably one of the top two of all time.
Crazy. Isn't it crazy how, and here is a situation, Bully, where you got to give AEW a lot of credit. And why this is going to give you a lot of promise going into their weekly show come the fall. Because of what you just said. Bully, you said the WWE in all those years couldn't do anything with Ty Dillinger. Within a month, AEW is able to make that guy into a main event wrestler.
And look at what they did with him. Listen, it is obvious that Cody is the Dusty of AEW. Yes?
Yes, 100%.
Here comes Sean Spears, Cody's real life friend, who was called, what was he called? A good hand?
A good hand.
Called a good hand. Dude, we could be the best friends in the world. If Dreamer ever referred to me as a good hand, I'd punch him in his fat face. You just don't say that. Sean Spears cracks him over the head. Boom. Overnight, we know who he is. Sean Spears sits down with JR. Boom. We know who he is. Tully Blanchard is now hanging and banging with Sean Spears. Remember when Flair was hanging out with Triple H?
Yep.
How much more over was Triple H for hanging out with Ric Flair?
You're hanging in there with the best. It takes you right to the next level. And great job. And again, what do we always say? A good head coach puts their players in positions to succeed. How do you make this story right? First of all, you have him sit down with Jim Ross, the greatest of all time, and go after Cody Rhodes, the creative mind behind AEW. And what do you have at the end of the day? A legend like Tully Blanchard whispering in his ear, and he just made a main event wrestler.
Like what you're hearing? Catch Busted Open live weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156, or on demand with the SiriusXM app.
If I had the pencil.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to get Cody and Sean Spears at All Out, correct?
Yes, I would hope so. Yes.
Who's going to be in Cody's, who's going to be in Sean Spears' corner?
Looks like it's going to be Tully Blanchard.
And who do you think, who would you imagine would be in Cody's corner?
Dustin.
I don't want Dustin in Cody's corner. Ooh. If you want to bring this story from 30 or 40 years ago forward, you know who you have in Cody's corner?
Can I guess?
No, because you're going to guess right, because I can see the look on your face, and I ain't letting you steal my thunder, kid. You have the enforcer. You have double A, Arn Anderson, in the corner of Cody Rhodes.
Yes.
What do you think, Dave?
I love it. I love it because who's the great equalizer? It's Arn Anderson. It's the enforcer, like you said. And there is history there. The story writes itself.
We are taking something from, what, 40 years ago and fast-forwarding it to two younger talents who are going to be able to get it done in the ring. The legends on the outside. The young studs on the inside. Can you imagine the face-to-face between Arn and Tully?
Amazing.
Can you imagine what the match is going to be like? That is great storytelling. That's how it should be done. Just sitting here thinking about it, I'm emotionally invested in that match. Wow. What's going to happen when Arn and Tully go face-to-face? Is Cody going to get his receipt on Sean for the chair shot? What's going to happen if this? Is there going to be a turn? Does Arn turn with Tully because they used to be together? And maybe they're going to show. I'm getting goosebumps just talking out loud.
And again, what it does is bring generations of pro wrestling fans that want to tune into that match. And it does not hurt the two guys that are in the ring.
With any of these other matches that revolve around athleticism, I don't feel this way. Because I can't sink my teeth into emotions of love and hate. Not that I can't sit back and appreciate a high spot match, but I appreciate storytelling and characters and promos a lot more than I do a lot of the flips and flying.
I agree. Let's finish up with the Nation. Let's go out to Charles in Nebraska. Charles, what did you want to say about AEW?
Actually, I was kind of thinking when you guys were talking about the Sean Spears interview and everything like that. And I don't know where their contract situation is, and I don't know what AEW is going to do in terms of intergender, but what if this leads to, down the line, Cody and Brandi versus Sean Spears and Tessa Blanchard?
I mean, again, Charles, thanks for the phone call. That all depends on what Tessa Blanchard's future is with Impact Wrestling. But, you know, that could be a possibility down the road. But I think the story that they're telling right now and who's involved in this story, Bully, I can't think of a better, more emotionally infused story than what we're seeing played out. And again, this isn't even being played out on TV. Imagine if this was part of a weekly television program.
Thanks for listening. Catch us weekdays on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.